Across the country, there are about 45,000 children in out-of-home care, and about 8,000 are in a foster care home. These kids rely on foster carers who open their homes, who feed and clothe them, provide emotional support, and often help them stay connected to their birth families. But in Victoria, some foster carers are reporting sudden reductions in their allowances for looking after kids with high-level needs. And it highlights the ongoing challenges around the country when it comes to finding foster carers for children who need safe and stable homes. The number of foster carer families has been dropping across all states and territories over the last 5 years. Cost of living pressures, low carer allowances, and carers feeling undervalued. It all adds up to a system that's letting down carers and vulnerable children. So what needs to change? Well, Samantha Hoger is Chief Executive of the Foster Care Association of Victoria and is with me now. Samantha, welcome.
Thank you, Tegan. Thank you for having me.
So, Samantha, a couple of months ago, your group started getting calls from foster carers. What were they telling you?
Over the last few months, Tegan, we've been, I guess, receiving a growing number of calls and anecdotally hearing from our carers who are experiencing a reduction in their care allowance level, often resulting in a reduction from a higher care allowance level, like the child was assessed to have high level needs, down to basic one carer level payment. And the care allowance, just for your listeners, is a financial contribution towards the day-to-day costs incurred while providing care for a child or young person.
And so you need to remember, complex needs maybe need a bit more funding.
Absolutely. We've got five categories here in Victoria, and the higher levels, the level four and five, are meant to reflect, you know, the additional time, experience, expense involved in supporting a child with greater behavioural, emotional, medical, developmental challenges. At the higher level, those children present often with, you know, several physical, psychological issues. They require extensive structure, strong routine, a lot of therapeutic support to undertake daily activities, you know, things like speech therapy, occupational therapy, numerous paediatric appointments. And what's clear is that those carers at that level are providing, you know, 24/7, round-the-clock care.
Do you have a sense of how many families are affected?
Well, our hotline has been receiving, you know, a number of calls from carers who have experienced this situation. It'd be fair to say that we're unlikely to be aware of all of them. Just one carer actually in this situation is too many. Mm. And the fact that level one payments in Victoria are issued at all is just widely insufficient. We have the lowest level one care allowance in Australia, which is nowhere, you know, near meeting the true costs of caring for a child, let alone the costs of, you know, raising a child in care that usually, you know, come from a trauma background and, you know, have very complex needs. So that shortfall places enormous financial pressure on our carers. And, you know, it really is driving many to leave the system altogether.
It's not just this one issue. You sort of say you've been hearing these calls over the last few months, but it sounds like it's sort of one contributor to a bigger trend that you've been observing.
Yes, look, definitely. Like I was saying, you know, in Victoria, our care allowance is just not keeping pace with inflation. Household inflation has been up around 6-7% in recent years. Our care allowance here has only increased by 2-2.5%, with no increase, you know, in the true value of our allowance since 2016, when back then it was only increased by $20. That was 8 years ago. So here carers are really doing it tough, and it's not fair. And I should just say that our basic care allowance is, you know, approximately $31 a day. And that's to cover everything from recreational, educational, health, therapeutic and daily living expenses, like, you know, providing food, nappies, formula, clothing, transportation. It's far below what's needed. But in contrast, the New South Wales government has recently, you know, recognised the need to increase their care allowance. And the stark contrast, for example, is that you'll have a child living in New South Wales, a 14-year-old child, and a 14-year-old child here. There's a difference of $400 per fortnight in that care allowance to what our Victorian carer would receive. we're losing more good carers than we are recruiting.
Samantha, as you say, each state sort of has its own department that handles child protection, like foster care. We did reach out to the Victorian government. A spokesperson told us that foster and kinship carers do an outstanding job supporting children who cannot live safely with their immediate family, and we value the work that they do. Care allowance levels vary based on age and needs of a child and can be reassessed as a child's needs changed. It's not related to budget, says this statement. There has been no change, the spokesperson said, in the care allowance policy. Well, just to cast the net a bit wider across the country, Renee Lee is also with me. She's the CEO of Adopt Change and a member of the National Foster and Kinship Care Collective. Renee, the challenges that we're hearing Samantha describe here, are they being felt Australia-wide?
Morning, Tegan. Look, I think if we look at the bottom line of how many children in the care system aren't in a family-based home, so they're not with foster carers or kinship carers, that's at around 10%, so around 4,800 children, which really demonstrates the shortage of home-based care. So we're seeing people who are no longer staying in the care system as a foster carer, and we're not seeing the same number of entries. So it certainly is a nationwide felt problem.
I have a text here, Renee. One person says, why do First Nations people who are kinship carers get paid even less than foster carers? Refer to the Yuruk testimonies.
There's carer payments, as Samantha was talking about before, in each state. So as well as the foster carers that you mentioned, in terms of the 8,000, 45% of the carers are kinship or relative carers. And so it will depend based on the jurisdiction that a carer is based in. And we also see that there are informal carers, particularly in this space where a relative will take in a child and they're not part of the authorised system, and they are certainly very unsupported financially.
We heard Samantha say before just the huge discrepancy between what a carer in Victoria would be getting for a child of a certain age versus the same situation but in New South Wales. Is it appropriate that it varies so dramatically across the country?
No, they're the same children needing the same level of care, and the same amazing carers who have the same cost of living challenges. So to be a carer, you need space in your home and the ability to care for a child and take time when needed to take them to appointments, etc. So it really is a question of viability. Carers, both foster and kinship carers, are volunteers, and the amount is quite small in terms of going towards the child's needs and caring for them. So really, in New South Wales, the reason there's been an increase is around the advocacy and the recognition that carers need the allowance increase just to be able to afford the role that they have taken on. So really, from a national perspective, this needs to be taken up elsewhere as well, because it has been recognised in New South Wales. It needs to be recognised across Australia.
What happens if the number of foster carers gets so low? What happens to those children?
Unfortunately, they're quite terrible outcomes. So we see with the 10%, so around 4,800 kids end up in a residential group setting, so essentially a group home with shift workers where children grow up instead of being placed with a family and having that sense of normality. And then a step down from that is being placed in a motel or caravan park with shift workers, which really is just opening up an additional potential for terrible things for that child. So it really is important that we have enough carers. The other, I guess, factor around that is looking at what the cost of that type of care is. So if you place a child in those non-family-based home settings, it actually costs the government upwards of $500,000 per child per year, sometimes $1 million per year. So really, when you compare that to, let's just say, around $15,000 a year put towards caring for a child in a home, there's a huge disparity, and the outcomes for a child that misses out on the family-based home are pretty damning.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor. I'm speaking with Renee Lee, who's the CEO of Adopt Change and a member of the National Foster and Kinship Care Collective. You also have been hearing from Samantha Hoger, who's the Chief Executive of the Foster Care Association of Victoria, talking about the fact that in Victoria, at least, there are reports of people getting less money for kids with high care needs, which is really impacting on their ability to provide good quality foster care, people exiting the system. And I'm asking for your stories. If you have been part of the foster care system, I'd love to know your story. I'd love to know if you have ideas on how it could be fixed. One text says, I'm a foster carer, worse than the allowance. The system is totally broken and the support for children is dropping. There's little continuity because they're so stretched and the additional burden lands on those who care. Well, Emma is a foster carer in Brisbane. She and her husband have three kids and then also have been foster carers too. Emma, what got you interested in being a foster carer to start with?
Good morning, Tegan. I think, like a lot of people, we just wanted to be part of society. We thought it's something that we'd do when the kids were older. And then I thought, hang on, why wait? You know, like at the time we had a 3, 5, and 7-year-old, and you're totally in the throes of parenting. You're doing it all. You know, and when you've got three kids, what's another? So I guess we thought, you know, why wait? Let's do it now. We also thought it would be an amazing experience for our children, you know, just to have that empathy for others, to be kind and just be accepting of different walks of life. So, you know, I think it was just a no-brainer for us to get into, for sure.
So you've gone in, like, no one sort of goes into foster care and going, oh, I think this is going to be really easy. Like, I think people know that it's going to be a challenge, but was it the sort of challenge you were expecting?
It's been a mind-blowing experience, actually. I think nothing could have prepared us for what we were essentially getting ourselves into. I think you just have a false sense of security that you're going to be making a positive difference and it's going to be an easy road. And I think just, you know, what we hear from carers and what we hear about the system, that yes, it's very broken, the support is very minimal, and you're handed our most vulnerable kids in society. And there's so much red tape, you know. It's not as if you can just parent them the way that you'd like to, you know, parent them. Or there's just so many factors that just keep popping up. And I think it's really hard to sometimes realise that you're doing it for the right reasons, because you're just fighting against a broken system.
Do you mind, do you have an example you can give on the sort of red tape that you've faced?
I think family connection is a massive one, especially when you're dealing with the smaller, you know, the tiny people in our society that are in care, you know, talking about the newborns and the babies. And, you know, I think the department is so overloaded and so overwhelmed with their caseloads that reunification is always going to be the key, which is absolutely fantastic. But all the restraints of wanting to keep babies connected to their families, but not having the resources to do it. So, you know, I think taking that time out of your own day and out of your own family's, you know, week is massive, because you feel responsible for, okay, the department can't facilitate contact this week because they're overloaded. I can do it three times. So, you know, I think that you've got all this moral responsibility that you want to continuously do the right thing, but it's either all put onto you, or it's left that the department will say, oh, actually, we can't do three times a week, we can only do one. And then you've got a mother with a newborn baby that, you know, it's out of her control that she can't have the child with her. But I feel like as society, we also need to support that, which the department lacks ginormously, you know, emotionally, physically, financially, all those things that we need as carers to actually keep these kids connected. It's just not happening.
So, Emma, you've had a number of babies in and out of your house over the 5 years you've been a foster carer. You don't have anyone with you at the moment, and you're really weighing up whether this is something you can continue to offer.
We are, definitely. Our care renewal is up in 3 months' time. So, you know, I think over the last 5 years, we've just We've had some beautiful cases. We've had some cases that are just, you know, you want to bash your head against a brick wall. You feel unappreciated. You feel used. There's no continuity within the department and the people that you deal with. So, you know, you feel like no one knows these kids. And as carers, you become the advocate for them and you become their voices. But your voice is not heard. Your opinion is irrelevant. So, you know, I feel like you're fighting a broken system. And I don't know if it's easier to walk away from that, or I don't know if it's, you know, something that you just want to keep picking at. And I believe you can't complain about a situation if you're not prepared to change it. So, you know, as carers, we're sitting there going, look, emotionally and morally, we really want to do this, but, you know, the emotional toll that it has on yourself and also your kids. And I think that when you've got your own children and you do become a carer, your children are, you know, they're undervalued, they're overlooked, and they are such an important part of the system, because they are the ones that are showing these kids like some normality in society. They're the ones that, you know, share their home, they open up their rooms, they, you know, share their toys, they play games with them, they, you know, they're such a huge part. And the department, I don't know, they're so unappreciative, and I think they, you know, they could do better in the support for families. So, you know, I think that we've just experienced so many times that it's like our kids are left in emotional, you know, that emotionally they don't cope when placements move on and there's no support for them. So I think the bigger picture is not only as adults wanting to make that difference, but the impact that it has on your family and, you know, whether or not time will fix that, you know, have a year off and then go back to it. But, you know, I don't know. It's a tricky one, Tegan.
Yeah. We're talking about foster care this morning here on Life Matters on ABC Radio National, about the various challenges that foster families face to remain in the system, the fact that the attrition rate is really high. And I'm asking you for your stories of fostering. A text here: we have been privileged to share our love and home with beautiful children as foster carers, but it has left us broken and we see it breaking many children in care. The foster care agency we work with operates like a business, with a lack of child and family focus. Their casework staff are lovely but underqualified, overworked, and there's constant turnover. This means inconsistent support for us and, most importantly, for the children. The text continues, we feel so conflicted being part of the foster care system when we see that it doesn't adequately care for children, families and carers. We don't want to abandon children we love. This texter finishes, I strongly discourage anyone from being a foster carer. It's heartbreaking and harrowing. Renee, hearing someone who's obviously been part of this system actively discouraging it, how does that land for you?
Look, unfortunately, it's not a surprise. We've heard from people in some of the surveys that we've run around that it's not something that they'd recommend. The numbers for that are too high, but not surprising considering the experience. And it's typically not around their experience of caring for the child. It's their experience with being part of the system, their frustrations with that, not being given the respect and communication and transparency that they need so that they can really care for the child in their home. So what we advocate for is that there is much better support for those who are caring for Australia's most vulnerable children, and so that they are respected for the huge role that they play, and that they're able to speak positively about the experience, which is globally recognised as the best way to find new carer homes as well, is they're talking about what that experience of care has been and attracting other people in.
How could we make this system more carer and child friendly in Australia?
When we see that it works, it is around respect for the carer and making sure that they are well supported. So the role needs to be first and foremost viable. So we need to ensure that there is adequate funding for a carer to be able to sustain that role. One of the other biggest items is that often children in the care system have an experience of trauma and they need therapeutic care to heal from what they have been through. And too many of the children don't have access to that care, not readily. And carers will often be advocating for that, and they need access to that medical and therapeutic support swiftly. It is the cost of caring for a child that has had that background, so it needs to be recognised as a priority. And for carers to be listened to in terms of what their needs are, to be treated as part of the team of people and actually the ones that are there 24/7 for our kids and teens in this space. So they need to be treated as such and really listened to.
Renee, if someone's listening to this conversation and still, in spite of having their eyes open maybe to the challenges, does want to be a foster carer, what's your advice?
Look, the organisations in each state and territory vary, so people are quite welcome to have a look at our website or the websites in their state and territory to find out information and to start that conversation. It's not typically an instant decision. It can take some time to think through and figure out if it's right for you. But I think as with many of the carers, it's people that have a heart for kids that do this despite the system and despite their experience. You know, if this is the experience for carers, we can only imagine how much worse that is for children that don't have their voice and that are subject to whether it's a positive experience or a negative in the system. So there's a lot of carers that will step up, and if people are willing to do that and to take on that role, it's really something that, you know, we do need to hear from more people. And there's organisations like ours and Samantha's who support carers through that process.
Thank you all so much for sharing your stories today. Renee Lee is CEO of Adopt Change and a member of the National Foster and Kinship Care Collective. You also heard from Samantha Hogar, Chief Executive of the Foster Care Association of Victoria, and Emma, who is a foster carer.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music, and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.